Hi, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of Women in Retail Talks. On behalf of the Women in Retail Leadership Association, I'd like to say thank you for helping to make 2016 a great year. Today, we have three of our favorite top tips from our Girl Talks East and West events. Finally, we want to wish you and your families a very happy holiday season, and we'll see you in 2017. And now, on to the show.
Act like an owner. And I think it starts with your mindset. You know, it's not to be confused with arrogance, which is all about ego and that, but how would your job change if you knew this was your only option? If you go to work tomorrow and you say, this is my only option, my whole family's future depends on this job. Failure is not in your mindset, right? You're going to do everything you can to make a difference. And while I know you all have many options, the truth is, if you do whatever job you're doing now, like an owner, everyone is going to notice. I remember the moment that I became an owner vividly. I was the director of the Pottery Barn catalog, and I had done some things that I was proud of. And my boss at the time, Pat Conley, called me into his office and told me about this promotion. And it was the biggest promotion in my life, bigger than being promoted to CEO, because I finally had a business that I was going to run, that I was going to own. And I was like, nothing is going to get in my way, not my gender, not my age, no person, no political situation. You know, I was going to make it happen. And, I thought about tonight, should I talk about gender? And I don't talk about gender because I don't think about gender. And because I don't think about gender, people don't think about my gender. And I have, been able to end up in the job I am because I'm comfortable, and I'm comfortable with both all types of people. And I haven't ever said I can't do something because of it. So they say, can you do this? You say yes. How hard are you willing to work? As hard as I need to work. What are you willing to do? Anything you want. I'm here for you. Helps, matters, people notice.
I mean, there's a sort of presumption that you have to want to be on a board. And I think for a lot of people, there's a bit of a mystique about being on a board. But I think most of all, it's sort of like, why is it relevant? And is it something you should be thinking about? The way I think about that question is really thinking about, what does a board bring you to your everyday life or to your career journey that you wouldn't otherwise get? So for those of you who are on boards, what has it brought to you? I think when you think about, is a board right for everyone, first of all, as people know, it's a actually pretty significant time commitment. Public boards and private boards have different time requirements, but just so you guys can sort of frame it, let's talk nonprofit, private, and public. Nonprofit, they'll take as much help as you can give them, because really the ability to bring business skills to a nonprofit is pretty valuable. The other thing to note about a nonprofit board is, if you're on any kind of nonprofit board, there is an expectation that you help raise money. So nonprofit boards typically have, you know, I think the benefit is they're mission driven, and it's a great way for you to connect with a cause that you care about and contribute and learn what a boardroom looks like, because I think that's one of the great things about nonprofits. But I think just keep in mind that there the goal is really fundraising, and they'll take as much business help as you can give them. Private companies, I think what people, and I speak specifically to tech companies because that's where I spent all of my private time in private boardrooms. You know, I would say once again, a private company board is time consuming in a very different way than a public company board. The way it's time consuming is you're not spending as much time on governance and audit committee and regulatory requirements. You're spending more time actually in the nuts and bolts of the strategy of the business, the strategy and the execution of the business. So to some degree, I think it's actually a very fun place to be if you like thinking about hard problems, right? I think the thing I would say about a private board, again, particularly tech, is once again, the founder's going to take as much as you can possibly give him. So private boards, or why do I say him? Him and her. I mean, God, my God. Like, this tells you something about where we all live and kind of where we still need to go. But I think, regardless if it's a him or a her, the point really is that in a private company board, lots of fun, I think, strategic, operational questions. You get to use a pretty full range of your ability. Challenge, again, is pretty time-consuming because a founder will take as much time as you can give them. And then the public company board, people always talk about the weight of a public company board, and that's really driven by, you have a set of governance requirements by the SEC and other things, so there's a lot of fiduciary responsibility to look at things like the quarterly earnings or releases or issues of succession. And then weaved into that, of course, is also the ability to influence strategy. And that's actually, the time commitments there are really driven by where the board is located and whether it's 4 or 8 board meetings a year. So I sit on the board at Ericsson and I go to Stockholm 4 times a year. And that doesn't sound like much, but by the time you add all the travel time, and then in between I'm on the remuneration committee, so I have another 4 times a year that I'm on a phone call, you're looking at a good, 20 days a year that I am dedicating to board service outside of my own company. And so that's the way to think about the time commitment. So just to recap on this point before we go to the next one, why serve? It's really about networking. It's about perspective outside of your day job. And it's about feeling like you can contribute to something bigger. Right.
So risk philosophy part one. Taking a risk always involves a constraint. And this is important because how many of you guys have had a team member or a work colleague say to you, "I can't because"? I can't because I need more budget. I can't because I need more people. I can't because I need the best lingerie photographer in the world, plus 100 models of different shapes and sizes and colors and all that type of stuff in order to like make my job go. And what I would say to that person and to all of ourselves, because we tell ourselves we can't because all the time, what you say to yourself is, if it was a big business already or if it was a known opportunity, you would have no constraints, because everybody would know that the opportunity is there. It's only when you're stuck with 500 bras in your living room that you have purchased yourself that you really start hustling to sell those bras and figure the problem out. And I'd like to suggest, I'm gonna suggest a couple different books today, but this is a really, really wonderful one, a beautiful one, because it's called A Beautiful Constraint. And it starts with the story of Google, and why does Google have that beautiful, clean homepage? They say it's because Larry Page was not a designer. So he turned a constraint and made it into an asset. And even at True & Co. today, we talk very openly about I can if, not I can't because. I can launch 4 catalogs in 4 months if with 1 designer, if I have great advisors, if I have, if I reuse the photos, and I'm really smart about planning it out. I can launch a try-on track for a nomadic retail experience that everyone said Gap had to do with all those millions of dollars, and you don't have that if you collaborate with the architects and the industrial designers and they see it as a partnership with you, right? So those are the types of things that we've made happen at True & Co., or you could get to 5 million women quiz takers, honestly, just by spreading the word through PR, right? And not having to pay for them. So there's a lot of different ways to basically skin the cat.
Thanks for listening. For more information on the Women in Retail Leadership Circle, please visit www.wirlc.com. Until 2017, this has been Women in Retail Talks. We'll see you next time.